what would it take to live the life you wanted? To stop the cycle of failed resolutions, burnout, and frustration, and step onto a better path to lasting transformation. One where the small steps matter more than the big ones. Where a setback actually frees you to move forward. Where the decision to start outweighs perfection. And where it's not all up to you. That's the power to change.
Have you ever started a project or maybe a trip or something, some task that needed to be done, but then when you started, you realize it was going to take you way more time than you wanted? Anybody? Maybe lately? Traffic, you know, stuff like that. I started tearing up the flooring from my porch, like porch balcony or whatever, and I realized it's like roof shingle sheet. There are two layers there that's like, I was like, okay, I'm going to be here a while, which these sorts of things make some of us procrastinators because we know we've been there before. It's like, I'm not starting that again. Or some of us are initiators. It's like we get started and then we realize it's way too much work. And so we move on to something else because it's way more fun to start. I know there's some initiators here, right? Some of you are finishers. You just don't start a whole lot of stuff because you want to make sure you get it done. But no one likes to be stuck in the middle of a project that is going to require more than we want to give. And yet, so often, that's how life change feels. Any change that we want to see happen in our life, it's like you take a couple steps in, and you're like, we're going to be here for a minute. So if you can relate to that, I want to welcome you to Cedar Creek this weekend. We are wrapping up a conversation we started at the beginning of 2024 on how do we experience the power to change, God's power in us, working through us, to change us. And what's that process that he wants to walk us through? That was week two. And who are the people that he wants to put around us to help us see that change? And what's the payoff that we need to be focused on? And this week, we're going to talk about the practice. What is it that we need to be focused on every day to help us experience the power to change? So whatever campus you're at, those of you watching online or on TV, if you are one of the men at Toledo Correctional, thanks for spending a few minutes with us. For those of you that are here, will you put your hands together to welcome those who are online and on TV? Give them a rousing hello. Thanks for being here. Before we get into this week, you've already heard about it if you've been in the room for a minute, but next weekend is one of our most favorite, most attended weekends of the year. It's called Preach Off. If you don't know, or if you missed the video at the beginning when people ask what Preach Off is like, it's like big time wrestling meets, not that we're wrestling, but you know, it's like, that got weird. Whose Line Is It Anyway meets American Idol, okay? It's where the laughs are real and the points don't matter unless you lose. And then they matter, okay? So one of the pieces of it is we're given random words that we have to fit in, and I need to practice for next week, so I need a random word. Aardvark. Brent. Thank you so much. Aardvark. What did you say?
Zebra.
Oh, I got two words. Okay. So... okay, no, we're not playing this game, okay? We're done. We're done with two, aardvark and zebra. I'm going to have a hard enough time trying to fit that in. There are two animals. So after Preach Off, we have a series that we're going to start. It's 2 weeks, actually. It's called Ready Player One. No, we are not walking through the movie or the book, although it was a good book. But we're talking about how we become a player in today's technology faith world or whatever. How do we navigate our faith in a technologically complicated world? What role does God have for us to play? And if you're like me, I have a love-hate relationship with my tech in my life, but also what I see happening with my kids and what I see happening in the church, and should we be more concerned? Should we be more accepting? And so I think it's helpful for us to talk about it. How do we relate with it? How do we use it? And how do we not let it take over our life? And as I was preparing, one of our staff members, one of our team members, sent me down an internet rabbit hole about pigeon nests. That's right, pigeon nests, the city-dwelling bird that is part of the dove family, or like mourning dove family, that's right. They're smart birds, they have a good sense of direction, they're messenger birds, they were used to deliver and receive messages, symbols of peace, doves are symbols of peace, all the same family, but they are notoriously lazy nest builders, okay? There are sites where people post the pigeon nests, and we're talking dozens of pictures, people submitting people submitting all sorts of different examples of these birds' humble abodes, like an ashtray, okay? I mean, it's good enough. Or if an ashtray isn't available, doormats. I mean, I love this picture because it's like the pigeon is caught on Ring, like, oop, 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 I think they got me here, you know? And there were a lot, surprisingly, a lot of doormat pictures there. And when you can't find a doormat, apparently, a glove will do just fine. And you think these are made up, but you check it out, okay? When you can't find what you need to build a nest, look for zip ties, you know, the local trash can. I'm serious, zip ties, or a strainer will work as well. I mean, all you really need to build a pigeon nest is a single stick. Literally. It's become so famous that people have made comics out of it, like how to build nests. Oh, you know, pigeon. Okay, well, let's get started. Let's try it. And ta-da! Based on a real-life example. It's like, well done. People... don't go the way that you want, just think of what a pigeon considers success to make you feel a little better about your life. I mean, honestly, in our lives, one of the hardest challenges in this experience, in this journey to see change happen, is the time and work it seems to take and the discouragement that we often feel with our lack of progress, or the defeat that we feel when we feel like we're regressing and taking steps back. We hear passages like our memory verse for this series, 2 Peter, right? Did you memorize the verse? By his divine power, God has given us everything that we need to live a godly life, and we have received this by coming to know him, the one who's called us to himself by means of his marvelous glory and excellence. Like we hear verses like that, and we're like, God's given us everything that we need. So why does it seem like so little has changed? Like, it can leave us feeling concerned, deflated. It's like we must be missing something. I must not have been doing it right. Or maybe God didn't give me what I needed. Maybe I wasn't on the list. Or maybe I'm just screwed up. And everybody else seems to be getting it, but I can't. If that's you, you're not alone. And there is this tension that we wrestle with that I don't know that we always see. And here's that tension. We tend to overestimate what we can do in the short term, and then we underestimate what we can do in the long term. Our culture is so easily swayed. It gets my attention too. We look for hacks and shortcuts and instant results. How to lose 10 pounds in 2 weeks. Make 6 figures in 6 months, have a dad bod to shred it in 30 days, kill an aardvark in your backyard. I don't know. You know, it's like, it was lame, but it worked, okay? I mean, it could sound really so convincing. And then when we don't get the results, it's like, well, shoot, I must have done something wrong. I didn't do it right. I'll just give up. I don't know that it's worth it. One of James Clear, he's the New York Times bestselling author on the book Atomic Habits, one of the resources that I use for the series. One of his discoveries that in the research that he found is the power of aggregated marginal gains. If you're like me, I'm like, whoa, what was that? You know, James Clear found that if we convince ourselves that change is only meaningful if there is some large, noticeable difference in our life. And so what happens is we put all of this pressure on ourselves to see meaningful big change very fast. Meanwhile, improving by 1%, though it may not be notable, may not even be noticeable, can actually lead to something very meaningful. And he put this to a visual. He says 1% better every day for 365 days means you'll be 37 times better by the end of the year. Whereas if you get 1% worse every day, you'll basically go from 1 to 0. It's basic math, but you end up 37% times better if you just get 1% better. And here's the thing. If you look at the start, there's really no difference between 1% better and 1% worse. But compounded over time, as time goes on, it's like, wow. Wow, that's amazing. That's a big difference. That's like going from horse to zebra. It's like, whoa, stripes, how'd you get there? Now, maybe, okay, thank you, courtesy laugh, that's great. Now, maybe you're like me and you're like, okay, Ben, but 1% better every day? Like, I'm not going to do that every day. Okay, let's adjust the formula for those of us that know we're not perfect. 1% better for, let's say, 232 days, that's 5 days a week, 46 weeks, and we'll give you a 6-week vacation. You know what that leads to? 10 times the improvement. 10 times better in some area than you are today. So maybe it's time to human size our expectation. That's right. Because maybe the pressure you're putting on yourself is way beyond what is reasonable for someone who is not divine. Like, yes, God's power through us is changing us. And what God is really inviting us to do, wants to partner with us to do, is to get 1% better every day. Like, hey, today, let's focus on getting 1% better. What if we made that our bottom line for the year? Oh, I didn't do it yesterday. That's okay. Get 1% better today. Stop just pursuing and looking for big change, and instead, 1% progress. Like, just a little bit more. Like, we think it's about finding instant success, but what if the life-changing adventure that God has for you and me is just a little bit each day? Now, oh, it's not going to do that much. Yeah, but over time, 365 days later, 10 to maybe 37 times better than you are, extrapolate that out over a lifetime, you could see significant change. So how do we get 1% better each day? Well, the way to get there is not by putting goals up on the wall. In fact, what James Clear argues so convincingly is that we get there by building better systems. Here's what he says. You don't rise to the level of your goals. You fall to the level of your systems. Think about this for a minute. Every single one of us wants to get better. I mean, every single one of us wants this year to be better than last year. We have a goal. We can see it. We want this year to be better. Everybody wants to be financially better this year than last year. If you're married or as a couple, you want this year to be better for your relationship than last year. If you're an athlete, you want to win the championship of whatever you're in or the preach-off. Like, I think we all understand goals, but the people who achieve those things or at least get close to those things are people who built the system and the habits to get there. And Jesus tells this interesting parable near the end of his life that illustrates this. It's in Luke. You can follow along in your notes if you want. Jesus is with his disciples. He told the story of a man who planted a fig tree in his garden and came again to see if there was any fruit on it, but he was always disappointed. Finally, he said to the gardener, "I've waited 3 years and there hasn't been a single fig. Cut it down. It's just taking up space." Can you relate? It's like we look at our life. We look at what we want and we don't see any progress. We look at the plan, the gym. We look at ourselves in the mirror. We look at our bank account. It's like, I don't know that it's really worth the work. We do this with our health, with our relationships, with our career, with our kids, even our relationship with God or your engagement with him. We're like, the fig tree isn't producing any fruit. No progress. Why do this? It's just taking up space on my weekend in my life. So we quit. We cut it out of our life. And Jesus is telling this story to illustrate another way. Jesus goes on. He says, the gardener answered the man, "Sir, give it one more chance. Leave it another year. I'll give it special attention, plenty of fertilizer. And if we get figs the next year, fine. If not, then you can cut it down." The gardener sees potential where the master just sees failure. And he offers a practical path forward. Do you see it? The three things: special attention, plenty of fertilizer, and we'll see what happens in a year. If you want to get 1% better, special attention, fertilizer, and give it time. Imagine what could happen over the next year. But let's take them one by one. Attention, that's really what you give your focus to. It's what your awareness, what you have an awareness of. It's what you are observing in your life. It's what, are you paying attention to what is really going on inside of you? It's getting curious about your life, your circumstance, your situation, the contributions you have made. Like, how are you doing really? Recently, on X, which is formerly Twitter, which is still weird for me, Elmo posted on, you know, Elmo from Sesame Street. Do you guys remember him? He had the high-pitched voice. Hey, boys and girls! Ha-ha! You know, like that. That Elmo posted this. He said, Elmo's just checking in. How's everyone doing? And almost 20,000 replies came into this one post. Some people were vibing. They felt great. They were, like, in their lane, but many were not. One post is like, hey, Elmo, I'm suffering from existential dread over everything that's going on. Another post, every morning I wake up, I can't wait to go back to sleep. Every Monday, I can't wait for Friday to come. Even celeb Rachel Zegler said she was resisting the urge to tell Elmo that she's just kind of sad. There are a lot of things going on, and I imagine you, many of you, feel the same way. It just feels heavy, especially when you have gray clouds for like a month straight in Northwest Ohio or Southeast Michigan. Now, giving attention, so let's just acknowledge, it's not always fun. This is hard. Like when you take a little inventory, sometimes it doesn't always feel positive. And sometimes we can get stuck here focusing and ruminating on how terrible things are. That's not what attention means. I mean, it's not just get stuck in what sucks, you know, if we could be honest like that, nor is it ignoring what's difficult. The gardener says, I'm going to give it special attention. In some English translations, he says, I'm going to dig around the roots, okay? Digging around the roots is breaking the hard soil so that water can get down to the root system. And God wants to do the same thing in your life and mine. He wants to break through where there's a hardness or a resistance to what we really need. Old beliefs and behaviors, hurts and hangups, habits that aren't ultimately helpful for us. And to some, it feels harsh. It's like, oh, I'd rather not. Like, ow, that's uncomfortable, but it's meant to help. Some people call it a severe mercy. Severe because it feels invasive, but mercy because it's ultimately what we need most. And God is interested in our hearts, not just the front that we put up for everybody. In order to get there, we're going to have to look at it. Proverbs 27, verse 19 says, as a face is reflected in the water, so the heart reflects the real person. It doesn't say, so Instagram reflects the real person. It doesn't say your face reflects the real person. It's your heart. And so take time to reflect, to dig beyond the surface. It's the best way to see our reality, and it's not always easy. Like, I need help. I do. It's why I try to stay in relationship with a therapist or two in my life, and I give them permission to ask pesky questions to make sure that I'm not just putting up this front that everything is okay. And usually, we are reminded of two things. Number one, you're not as bad as you feel. Some of you feel pretty bad. And number two, you're not as put together as you think. Because sometimes we think we got it. We think we got it all put together. And maybe we just need reminded that it's a little more complicated than we think. And when we aren't right, when things aren't going well, like get to the root cause, ask why 5 times to get down to that root issue. A couple of weeks ago, I came home and I was in a mood, okay? I think my wife, Lauren, she said I was a bit glum. That's an interesting word, glum. Frustrated, disappointed, a little annoyed, maybe a little short with her or the kids or just disconnected. And I didn't really feel like talking about it. And eventually, after she asked a few times, I decided to vent or kind of like try to bring her up to speed. And I gave her basically word salad on all of the problems. I'm not sure it really made any sense. And I'm feeling a little defeated, like, I don't think it'll ever get any better. And Lauren's response was hey, let's remember that 2 weeks of foggy gray outside isn't helping. And it was a simple statement, but it's like, oh, yeah. Every January, February, I start to feel glum. And if I'm not careful, I'll make it about everybody else and me and blah. And the truth is, sometimes we need to get to the root cause of some of this stuff and go, oh, yeah, there's a lot going on. I mean, this is what happens with the mistakes that we make. Oftentimes, we get so caught up in the mistake that we don't realize that our failures not all failures are created equal. And so instead of carrying this like, oh, I screwed it up again, or I didn't get where I needed to go, stop, give it some special attention. Because some mistakes are actually good mistakes. That's right. Some mistakes are good mistakes. For example, beginner mistakes. Like you have to start somewhere. If you quit riding a bike after you wrecked your bike once, you would miss out on so much. So sometimes when we're starting something new, you're not going to get it right. I'm not going to get it right. So let's stop expecting ourselves to get it perfect right away. We're going to get 1% better every day. Stop, special attention, learn and grow. Another type of good mistake is stretch mistakes. Anytime you're experiencing something that you're pushing beyond what and you're going to make mistakes. You're going to hit a lid that you're going to have to stop and give some special attention and grow through. These are mistakes that can actually help you grow. Mistakes that we want to avoid, well, sloppy mistakes. We want to avoid that, but we're going to make them. And if you can sit down and go, you know what, that was just a sloppy mistake. I lost concentration. I moved too quick. I was skimming. I didn't focus. I had too much going on. Special attention, learn, and grow. And the last one, it's probably more common than we want to admit. It's avoidance mistakes. It's not taking the opportunity to take a step or to ask for help or to say yes or to say no or to reach out to someone. It leads to regrets. Sometimes it's this that leaves us stuck in analysis paralysis instead of stop, special attention, learn, grow. And so take time each day or weekly with friends, with people in your group to pay attention to what's going on, to ask God, God, what do you see? When you make a mistake, what kind of mistake was it? What do I need to learn from and grow so that tomorrow I can get 1% better? Pay attention, because that's what brings clarity on where to put fertilizer. You know what fertilizer is, right? It's manure, I know, right? It's fuel, essentially. It's food for the plant. The gardener said, I'm gonna give it special attention and plenty of fuel. The gardener knows what the tree needs. He knows how to give it help. I don't know how many of you enjoy houseplants. Do we have anybody who enjoys houseplants? A lot of houseplants? A few of you? Yeah. You're fortunate, okay? Because our house is plant hell. That's where plants come to die. It's true. Lauren has made some great progress in this area. I don't know that I'm contributing anything of value. For a while, I was adding too much water, and they were like, really, it only needs like a half a cup, and I'm giving it a whole pot. And the leaves would get brown, and I'm like, yeah, but it's brown. It needs more water or not enough sunlight or whatever, and eventually the plant dies. And I think we can do the same thing spiritually. Spiritually, you have to discover what is right or next for you. And sometimes we try to copy what we see everybody else doing. Oh, this book that everybody's reading, it's amazing. Or I went and did this, and you try it, and you struggle. And it's like, oh, I must be bad. I must not get it. I must not be where they're at. And then there are other times where a book or a movie or something is really amazing. There is no one size fits all when it comes to your spiritual or even personal development. Here's what is true, is you're going to need some interaction with the Bible, some prayer in your life, and some way to serve other people. The Bible, prayer, and serving other people. The Bible, prayer, and so build systems or disciplines that help you grow. In the first century church, they described it this way. Don't you realize that in a race, everyone runs, but only one person gets the prize? So run to win. All athletes are disciplined in their training. They do it to win a prize that will fade away, but we do it for an eternal prize. What is it that matters most? It's your spiritual life. It's what's going to live forever. Our life here matters, but it's going to be a blip compared to what God has planned for us for eternity. So let's stay spiritually focused in our life. To do that, here's what Paul says. So I run with purpose in every step. I'm not just shadow boxing. I discipline my body like an athlete, training to do what it should. I'm running purposefully, intentionally. I'm not just like throwing punches to the wind, but I'm investing strategically. I'm building systems and habits that are going to yield better results. He was writing to raise up another young pastor. He said it this way to Timothy. He says, you can go to the next slide for me. He says, physical training is good, but training for godliness is much better, promising benefits in this life and the life to come. Like when you invest in your relationship with God, it makes this life better and it makes the life to come better. The word, though, is discipline. It's training. It's build systems that help you grow. Jocko Willink, the former Navy SEAL who's written a lot of leadership books, and he has fun books, especially if you have boys in the like 8 to 14 range. He's known for saying discipline equals freedom. Like if you really want freedom in your life, discipline is the root of all of those good qualities. It's growing the spiritual internal muscles that allow us to say no to cravings, help bring down our emotions and our ego and our anxiousness, our apathy and our anger. It can help move your life forward so that you're self-controlled. It's a deeper kind of strength. And we don't grow in discipline by saying, I need to be more disciplined. You actually have to build systems in your life that help with this. So what I do is I try to make unhelpful behaviors or habits harder. I change the environment. I make it harder for me to do the things that I don't want to do. So if I don't want to hit the snooze button on my alarm, I put my alarm on the other side of the room. So I have to get out of bed to go turn off my alarm. And I know some of you are like, well, that won't work for me. I'll need another system. So hire somebody to throw water on you when it's time to get up. Find a system that works for you. If you spend too much money with a credit card, stop carrying your credit card around. Go cash. Oh, that'd be too difficult. Well, apparently it's too difficult for you to use a credit card. Build systems that make your unhealthy habits harder. Oh, I'm clicking on sites that I really shouldn't be clicking on my phone. Lock down your phone and give a friend or your spouse the passcode that allows you to navigate. Oh, that's too restricting. Well, hang on. Why try to avoid a temptation tomorrow that you could eliminate today? I mean, really, it's, do you want to get 1% better or do you want to keep telling yourself, I got this? There are dozens of these in my life. I don't spend alone time with the opposite sex at a restaurant, out for coffee, unless it's my wife or a family member. It's not, oh, Ben, you're so weak. Well, no, I'm actually trying to eliminate the opportunity for any of those temptations. And does it create challenges? Sure. But I want to make unhelpful behaviors harder. And on the other side of that, I want to habit stack behaviors that I want in my life. One of these simple ones for me is like every time I go to the dentist, I walk in with shame because I don't floss like I should, okay? I know. I brush my teeth, but I don't floss. And so what I've done is I've just added flossers right next to my toothbrush. I brush my teeth every day. I just feel like flossing is too much work when it's all kind of close. And so those little flossers, it just increases my chance of flossing at least once or twice a week rather than every day. Well, you know, whatever. I try to put discussion cards on our dinner table so that I don't pick up my phone and we don't pick up our phone, but instead there are conversation topics right in front of us that can help us engage in conversation. I memorized the memory verse for this month. Well, Ben, you're a pastor. Yeah, but it still takes work. How did I do it? I said it every day for the 21 days of prayer out loud. Lindley, I was talking to Lindley last week, and she struggles reading the Bible sometimes, right? And so she just built a habit every night. She listens to an audio version of the Bible on the Bible app with some meditation music. Like our app is meant to stack gratitude, prayer, and scriptural reflection. Groups are a great way to accelerate growth in this area. Fertilize what you want to get better and then give it time. God is probably more patient with your growth than you are. God is probably more patient with your growth than you are. And so human-size your expectations of yourself. God knows what you're capable of. He knows you and I need salvation, and he provided that for us. He graciously invites us to trust him. That's why the Bible is full of encouragement like this in Galatians. Let's not get tired of doing what is good, because at just the right time, we will reap a harvest of blessing, a harvest of fruit if we don't give up. So don't quit. Don't give up. Keep leaning in. Maybe it's not quite the right time. Maybe you haven't seen the full breakthrough, but you will. You'll reap a harvest of blessing. James, the brother of Jesus, he said it this way. He said, God blesses those who patiently endure testing and temptation, and afterward they will receive a crown of life that God has promised those who love him, those who continue to endure. So will we be tested? Yes. Will you be tried? Yes. Will it be sometimes hard? Yes. Sometimes we'll mess up. Sometimes our best will be a pigeon nest, okay? And we're gonna be like, okay. But God in his grace helps us get up, dust ourselves off, trust him, and get 1% better the next day. And as you do that, you start to experience more of his blessing in your life. It's worth it. And so that's the heart behind the parable. And maybe you're wondering, well, why did Jesus share that parable in Luke chapter 15? Well, I think part of the reason is because some people's first thought of God is that he's harsh. And he's just gonna cut, remove, and punish anybody who doesn't do it right. Or maybe there are other people who feel like they can just wait. I'll just put it off until later. And Jesus is trying to teach us, like he's trying to teach his disciples, that he is a gardener among us, willing to dig around the roots to help us give special attention to what really matters. He wants to bring fertilizer and fuel to the things that you and I need most. And he's given us a specific amount of time to experience that, because someday our life here will come to an end. And so Jesus ultimately is sharing this story to remind you, to remind his disciples, to remind us that he is for you. He is for you. He wants to see you grow. And so each day, lean into God's Spirit. He knows what's best. Trust him to do his work. That is the power to change. And so the choice is yours. The question is, what path will you take?